Jesse and I had been married for 2 months, and I was beginning seminary here when we moved into a house at the top of this hill. And together with two other students from the Graduate Theological Union, we began living in an intentional Christian community. We sought the fellowship, and it was also practically helpful because we were broke. The four of us agreed on basic goals: sharing prayer, sharing meals, and sharing responsibilities. As a part of this, we agreed to a sort of modified common purse. The second chapter in Acts makes this life sound so easy and glorious. In the temple and at home, praying and breaking bread, their energy was magnetic, almost irresistible. People flocked to them. The Spirit had come upon them, and that fire was spreading. They were filled with awe. I have to wonder what is left out of the story. Call me skeptical, but was it really that harmonious? I mean, what were their early community meetings like, those business meetings? When did they have time to work with all those hours in prayer and in fellowship? What happened when people fell back into their old ways of looking out for their own best interest? I think first we have to ask what the purpose of the story is. Why did they tell it in that early church? Some of it may have been a historical portrait, though scholars more often read it as a catechetical text, which is to say that the author hoped the story would teach us how to live. There must have been friction and fights, right? With all these humans working out a new way. And yet, this commitment of holding together was the essence of their new community. Freewheeling generosity defined their common life. This teaching story seems almost like a vision. And it can be a roadmap pointing us in the direction of living as a spirited community. For our part, we didn't have much experience living in an intentional community. But it started out well enough. But this map from Acts proved really challenging. The common purse was particularly fraught. Quietly, we began trying to make sure that we received from the community exactly what we put into it. We kept a fishbowl on the windowsill in the kitchen to collect receipts for common expenses. And then we would divvy up the tab. And month by month, we each began opting out of certain things. One person didn't eat eggs, and another didn't eat much butter, so they didn't want to pay for them. And it snowballed. The algorithm of who shared what with whom grew more and more specific, and the equations of the Excel spreadsheet grew really complex. One person opted to have his own personal stash of olive oil. Others left the share of whole grains. And then a while into the year, one decided that he would rather not pay for replacement mop heads because he preferred to use a Swiffer instead. It was ridiculous. And I also remember it feeling impossible not to participate in the absurdity of this frantic dance. I mean, think how unfair it would be if I didn't part. And just like that, it ceased to be a common purse. It was about money, yes, and we were all pretty broke. But I think that beneath that, at least for me, it was also about keeping score. What was supposed to be community and relationship had been hijacked into a long list of transactions and, an obsession with fairness. We were stuck in the fear that there might not be enough. And then Jesus shows up as the gate, not just the good shepherd and identity that we can be pretty comfortable with, but Jesus is a gate that some would corrupt to let some people in while keeping others out. A place where some would restrict access depending on if they judge others to be good enough. But Jesus says nothing about deserving entry here, nothing about scorekeeping. Jesus just calls his sheep by name, and they follow him in and out of the fold. He's not barricading the door, he's hosting the opening. Despite the disciples' confusion while Jesus is speaking, that early community in Acts understands Jesus the gate. They have torn down the walls that had surrounded them. More are joining them each day, coming in droves, and incredibly, they trust that there will be enough, as Jesus promises. He makes no promises of a lavish life here. He offers them a way into a home. And he invites them to follow him out into freedom, where they will be fed. We come and go together, and it's enough. It's the kind of over-the-top scene that can make people uncomfortable. Maybe especially in Berkeley, right, where it's plenty progressive and also there's a lot of wealth to think about. They share everything? They sell their belongings and split the cash, making sure to meet everyone's needs? It's wild. What this community is doing is not fair, but it is good. Friends, hear the simple truth of gospel economics. It is not supposed to be fair. The balance sheets won't balance out. Not between God and us. Not between our neighbors and ourselves. And that is fine. As much as it makes us squirm, that's actually not a problem. The truth of gospel economics is this promise of abundant life, where all is held in common and everyone has enough. I don't fully know how my housemates experienced that year, but for my part, I think the anxiety of our bank statements was only the tip of the iceberg. Deeper than that, I don't think I really trusted that there was enough. And not just enough money, but also enough time, enough community. And so I settled for the goal of transactional friendships and the low, low bar of fairness. But the spreadsheet will not save us or make us whole. In Acts, it's not just that people are generous with their cash and their possessions. They seem to be tremendously generous with how they bring themselves to their relationships. Rather than keeping score, they pay attention to the gifts and the needs that each person brings. Fundamentally, it's a stance of generous trust. And that's the call. We are called not just to be generous with our resources, but generous with our discernment. Sometimes we have nothing to give. And that is all right. That's when we discern what it is that we need and ask for it and receive that life from others. We are generous with our resources when we are able, and then we are honest and humble and brave to receive help when we need it. And here is where the fairness piece can be so tricky. We are called to welcome the care we need, even if we might not be able to repay that same person down the line. Because again, this, this isn't a transaction. It's not going to be fair. Instead, we're promised abundant life, broken and shared together. And honestly, this roadmap from Acts is really tough. It's as tall an order as love your neighbor as yourself, maybe because it's a concrete version of that commandment. As in, love your neighbor by holding everything in common. Love your neighbor by bringing yourself fully to the table, all that you have, all that you need, trusting that you will be met. And it's hard to lean into it because we screw it up all the time. It's easier to think of this scene from Acts as no more than a lovely inspirational poster, because actually living this way can go sideways in really painful ways. It wasn't a total disaster in that house we shared, but we threw in the towel after just 1 year. I carried more resentment than gratitude for it for a long time. It left me hesitant to fully give myself to a community. But in truth, there is no guarantee that if we bring ourselves fully, we will be met. Sometimes we voice our need and get a cold shoulder. Or we stretch ourselves to give liberally and later find out that someone has taken advantage of us. There's real risk in trying to live out this unfettered generosity. I imagine it must have helped that early community that they practiced this way of being all in together. Day by day, they broke bread together. It got into their muscle memory, deep into their bones. What will it take for you to set aside transactional ways and live out this deep gospel generosity? What would have to change? We practice it here also. We gather our gifts and we bring them forward, and we come around this table with open hands. We bear our empty need, stripped back to this vulnerable place with a simple, hungry request. And then we receive this bit of bread, a sip from the chalice. It's not much, really. Sometimes the bread is hard and crumbly, or sometimes you get passed by on the first time. And yet we do this. We practice this way. We trust that somehow, when we come around this table, even if nothing is fair, even if we can't repay the gift, it will be enough. Everyone will be fed. We'll give ourselves to this generosity. This is our abundant life.